Hello, hello. This is Chris, seafarer turned designer.
And this is Carl, nurse turned designer. Welcome to Design Shifters,
a podcast on how people shift to design.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Justin. This is really a privilege of ours to be like, you know, to interact with someone in the design industry that we look up to. We can get into further details after, but we've heard about your background in, you know, as a design leader and an advocate in design and also like author, speaker. We seldom get to interact with those kind of, you know, caliber. So yeah, welcome to the show, and yeah, looking forward to learning a lot from you today.
Well, appreciate it, guys. Thanks for the thoughtful intro. It's great to be here.
And Justin, first of all, tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you start? Where are you now? And what's the plan for the future?
Yeah, it's funny being on Design Shifters. Where my career hasn't shifted from design throughout. And we'll talk about, you know, how we can leverage a consistent set of values to kind of navigate wherever we end up in design. But for my part, you know, the story is pretty design centric. Whereas, I had a eureka moment in high school where I figured out design was it for me. I've had very few moments of crystal clarity like that, I guess, in my career, in my life, where I came across something and I'm like, that's it. Like, I know that's what I want to do. And, from there was into the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. I had, kind of a traditional classic graphic design, visual communications, training, typography, layouts, things like that. And from there, that was around the time where you would tell your mom or your dad you're a web designer, and they would kind of scratch your heads and say, what? You know, like that is a career was a very new thing. But the application of my formal design training to what I like to call the digital landscape and, you know, problems to be solved, and we could figure out, you know, what the rules were and how we could break them, that became incredibly appealing to me immediately. So I went from that into digital interactive design for the rest of my career. And it's, I've been, since I graduated, it's been, probably 20, 24, 25 years, at this point in design. And it's been, in-house, out-of-house, tech, studio, agency, within the last probably 17 to 20 years, it's been leadership focused, specifically. I've been leading teams, leading organizations, growing teams, helping others achieve their goals, as it aligns to my fulfillment, is helping others evolve. And most recently, starting my own design consultancy called Anomaly, which is something I'm very excited about. That's very new for me as well. And I consider myself a student of my crafts and always learning and always evolving. And I'm very much in student state once again, being in more of like a consultant role. So it's been a fantastic journey for me. Design is something I don't, like clock in and clock out about. I'm always learning and reading about it and evolving and growing. And I love to be inspired by others like yourselves, where I can kind of come in a conversation like this and talk about design. This is probably going to be the best part of my day for sure.
Awesome. So you've already like a pretty wide experience in design, and also you still continuously speak about design, write about design. What motivates you though? I'm curious, like, what drives you to constantly spread the word of design, so to speak?
I think I'm at the point in my journey, and I say journey because, I think it's an unending point of evolution in design, exactly, yeah. where I have a good amount of experience and learnings that I think might help others on their journey as well. And, I mentioned values. I think that's going to be a big part of what we talk about today. Once I was able to ascertain how core that is to both our professional and personal spheres of existence, and how if you have a core set of values that apply to both, that drives evolution. What motivates me to speak about it is, I've made mistakes in my career, and I consider myself a student of my craft. And I don't personally like titles like thought leader or branding myself as such, because I feel like that puts a point of finality about who I am at that point and where I'm growing and evolving as well. So helping others evolve in their roles, in their crafts, you know, now as a consultant, I have no more folks on my team per se, but I feel like I could still help others in this capacity or talking about design or writing about design in a mentoring slash advisory slash coaching capacity. And I feel like that's very much my calling. Whereas earlier in my career, I was rewarded by my hands being in motion and doing my own design and receipt of that. Now it's other helping others evolve in that capacity. So that's what I try to do.
And on the topic of values, when we look at your we look at Anomaly, we look at your LinkedIn profile, we looked at read your book, there's always this talk about humble and practical design leadership, and it's quite rare right now, or I think just because of all the noise on social media and thought leaders and all that stuff. But it's quite rare to put humble into design also. Tell us more about this. How did you come up with a value that's centered or at least has humility into it?
Well, again, going back to my the journey of my career and in the new book I have coming out, In Fulfillment, The Designer's Journey, there's an entire chapter about humility in design. And it's a very narrative and storytelling book. And I tell a story about my own journey earlier in my career as a designer where I did not leverage humility. I had some early success quickly coming out of art school and got some notoriety. And, you know, that was the era of, you know, design portals and design blogs and forums. And it went to my head, you know, that kind of success. And you know, there are subjective detriments to that, and there are objective detriments to that. And I feel like the thing that is universal are the objective detriments to that. For example, the evolution of my design stagnated. You know, my creativity stagnated. I wasn't taking feedback in stride or taking feedback at all. And thankfully, it was a short lived stagnation. My friends at the time and my peers were very candid with me about my lack of humility. And that was, you know, a key point in the evolution of my career. I'm glad it happened sooner rather than later, if you will, because I was able to pivot from that for the 20 plus years from there. So, you know, values are personal to everyone, but I feel like there are core/essential values, and I think that's even the title of that chapter, a designer's essential value, that are universal against the objective point that a designer or heck, a lawyer or a cab driver or a dentist have to leverage. And I think humility is one of those, because when humility is a core value of ours, that makes us students of our craft throughout the duration of our career, whether it's working in an independent contributor capacity, whether it's working in a leader capacity, that helps us evolve. And that helps me go into the office, virtual or tangible on any given day, and grow from feedback from my peers or feedback from my team. You know, so we talked about humility, even the term like manager to me, like a manager is a title, like a manager is a business card title or a parking space. Like a leader can be someone 2 days out of school, or a leader could be, you know, someone 35 years in their career. So I try to be inspired by those I have the privilege to work with as much as I can hopefully inspire them. So that's why I think humility is absolutely key in that capacity.
Interesting. So I want to probably try to dig deep on the value of humility and also being able to create values of, probably more on how to build value as a designer, how to build that character. Can you tell us more of what is the importance of gaining values as a designer in the industry, in the in the business-centric industry that we're on?
Yeah, that's a fantastically deep question. And the first, I'll give a part A and a part B. My part A response to that is every business operates under a code of ethics, spoken or unspoken, whether they are printing it on their cafeteria walls or their swag, or it's just the way they operate. And your values, your values, when they've been identified and you're crystal clear on what they are, how they align to that business's ethics, keenly will inform how fulfilled you are by your work, which is essential, because I feel like design is connection made manifest. Design is a tool or a mechanism of connection. And when you are not fulfilled by your work, you, that connection can be severed, which is detrimental both to my work and my evolution, but almost as, if not more importantly, those who are interacting with my work. And that, you know, sometimes it's a concert poster or an app icon, and, you know, that severity of the connection can be less impactful, but sometimes we're designing systems, you know, that require much more severity in healthcare and government, you know, things in that capacity. So our identified values, as they align to a business's ethics, you know, can we go into an organization knowing like two of our five essential values are going to be compromised, like based on the product that's being built or what have you? And then how does that affect you? Do you know you could still be fulfilled? Do you know you could still do good work? So that is my first macro level answer. My more micro level answer, my part B answer, is when we are keenly aware, when we are keenly aware of the practices in which we thrive. And that means, you know, do I have, you know, do I leverage my empathy in the way I, you know, help others? And of course, as a designer, I would assume empathy is a value in some capacity. Or is it being compassionate? Or is it a desire to evolve? Or do I need to be challenged to be fulfilled? When we are keenly aware of those practices in which we thrive, those values become absolutely portable in terms of our professional lives and our personal lives, or relationships that are personal or professional. And, you know, then I can take those values, if I want to focus on design, from saying, oh, you know, these aren't scratching the itch. Maybe I want to, you know, start pursuing research a little more, or maybe I'm interested more in front-end development, or maybe I want to do something, maybe I want to be a carpenter and do something completely different. That fulfillment is always going to be a beacon. I use the term North Star a bit in my book, that fulfillment is always going to be a beacon to help me be fulfilled, agnostic of profession or agnostic of what relationship I'm in at a given point. And I think that is massively, massively valuable as we, you know, kind of have our career journeys.
Interesting. The way I'm hearing it is that even the discovery of values is a journey on its own, right? Like, be able to probably know what you want, what you don't want is a journey on its own as a designer, right? That's just what I'm hearing right now. So on that note, I want to probably also understand your perspective on how much to, you know, how to balance between ethics, your wants, your needs as a designer, and also, you know, the main goal, which is to make money. How to know? And I know this is probably like way too early in the topic, in the conversation, but I'm curious your perspective on that.
I don't think it's too early at all. I think that's a fantastic question. And I would never say, you know, you work at this company that makes a product that, you know, mines people's data, just quit. You know, quit. You can't be there anymore. It's on you as a designer to quit. I would never take a stance of that severity, because like you said, making money, putting food on the table, caring for a family, what have you, obviously that is a massive, massive consideration. That's why, you know, I kind of planted the seed earlier, being aware of not always having the perfect fit. Like I said, it's not always going to be like, I know these are my five values. This business like ticks all five boxes. Sometimes we go into organizations where, you know, it's a 3 of a 5, or it's a 2 of a 5, or 4 of a 5. And, you know, I think just having that awareness is huge, because you're going to say, okay, I'm not going to tick the box here, but these other four, like, I know it's going to be a satiating, fulfilling experience. And I would say most of the roles throughout my career have been in that capacity, where it hasn't been, you know, the utopic, unicorns and rainbows caliber role. But One thing, again, to bring humility back into the equation, I find it massively valuable to grow from the negative experiences as much as the positive. And that's been a hugely valuable mindset for me as a father, as a human being, as a leader within organizations, regardless of my org chart hierarchy. Because then I'm always able to put people first. I'm always able to have that kind of mindset. So I think that is absolutely massive to grow from experiences that impacted you and like hold that, not hold it as something that holds you back, but hold it so you remember how that felt. Like, again, to leverage empathy and compassion. So when we have that, you know, kind of always in the back of our mind and not in something that holds us back, but something we can learn and grow and evolve from, I think that's a beneficial experience as well. Like I've been in roles before where I've walked in the first day and nobody knew why I was there. The person who hired me didn't communicate it to the organization, or they didn't show up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I just kind of sat there and twiddled my thumbs, or I was given project work straight away and I didn't know what the heck I was doing or who the client was. And I remember those, like as I've even telling that story, like I remember how I felt in that moment. So that's why when I have a role now, and if I've, you know, when I've been in leadership positions, like I make sure when somebody is hired and they walk in, they don't have that feeling of like, why am I here? Like, or that energy isn't severed from signing on the dotted line to that first day. So I think that's been massively positive in my career. Not to get too personal, but I have a therapist that I've been seeing for probably 20 years. And one of the things they told me is everything, you know, everything that you've experienced along the way has shaped who you are now. Like, you remember this? Are you proud of how you've evolved from it now? You remember that? Are you proud about how you've grown from it now? And I thought about when I was able to shift my perspective in that capacity, not poor me, but wow, like that's helped me become XYZ, or it's helped me become more driven, or it's helped me become more focused. That's where growth lies, I think, taking those experiences and evolving from there.
And that's very powerful, especially when you try to look back at that. And, you know, those are hard times. And then if you grow from that and you realize like, man, like I went through that. And now I can learn from that. And that's really, really powerful. And right now that you're growing your organization, you have Anomaly here, how are you cultivating a more, you know, a values-driven, a creative culture in your organization?
Well, the beauty of it is that it's built upon a foundation of my own values in my own environment. Like, you know, having that crystal clarity now, I'm able to bake it into the DNA of the culture, about whom I want to work with, the work I want to do, the value I can offer. And, you know, a brief story, you know, like you led with, I've given quite a few talks and I've written some books in my career and I've done podcasts with great folks like yourself. And that never really rattles me, or like in job interviews, like I'm an introvert, but I've always felt confident in job interviews because, you know, like I know what I'm talking about. Like I'm confident in my work or talking about myself. But when I've been in roles before in my career and at organizations where I was an employee, and then, you know, you do that simple act of let's go around the room and introduce ourselves. Like I would stumble 9.9 times out of 10 on that. And I'd be like, I'm Justin and I'm having this inner monologue. I'm like, should I say my title or should I say, you know, who else is on my team? And like every time I would get tripped up, even if I did mental prep in advance. And the first time I had a meeting as Anomaly with a potential client, and same thing happened. Let's go around the room. And it just flowed. It was just, I was confident and I gave a great, I think a solid introduction. And I went back to my car after that, and before I put the key in the ignition, I just kind of sat and I thought about like what was different about that introduction. I thought about, you know, I was in a room with like the energy that I cultivated, and I was talking about our values, and I was talking about the way I feel like I can provide value, and I didn't have to worry about political machinations. Like there's somebody else in the room, like I shouldn't say this or I shouldn't do that, or like I just had this really terrible meeting and it affected my energy. Everything was just in this harmonious, with all these kind of boxes ticked caliber environment. So you know, the way I can provide value to clients, I'm crystal clear on across design and craft and culture and engagement. And, you know, as we talked about before, identifying the practices where I know I thrive and my values are most, fulfilled, like that's really helped me, form a business where I feel like I can, you know, have the most success.
Yeah. You have your book, Cultivating a Creative Culture. And, you brought up a good point, on our previous conversation about your approach on like knowing your new employees. Can you narrate that further? Because I think that is really valuable, and organizations probably should learn from your approach on how you like bring the new employees on board to your company and also bring them into your culture, your creative culture in your organization. So can you narrate that to us also?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking about that, Chris, because I love talking about it. It's been interesting. When I did, you know, the podcast and interview circuit from that first book, which came out, 6 years ago now, I feel like that was the one nugget, even in conversations I've had where people like absolutely like had that as a takeaway. And I talked to, you know, numerous agencies at that point where they've actually implemented that, that new day one or that onboarding process, that hiring process. So if that's the one thing people got out of that book, I think that's absolutely phenomenal. So I'm jazzed to talk about it now too. You know, when somebody normally starts a new role, they come in on a Monday, and you know, heaven's willing, you know, they come in and like somebody's there to greet them. And you know, normally you're in, you know, maybe 5 days of orientation or hopefully not thrown right into project work. I've mentioned that before. That's happened to me on more than one occasion, where I, you know, I've like started working that day or like working a client. I had no idea what the heck they were doing. And that, you know, the general mindset there is there's 5 days stretching before you come in on a Monday, you're there through a Friday, and there's a very deliberately, there's a very deliberately put in place process that is designed to generate a certain amount of momentum. You're there to be a part of the team. You're there to be an employee. You're probably in a, you know, like an orientation or a training with, you know, probably a bunch of other people from different parts of the organization. That's happened to me more than once as well. To me, that feels like I'm going to name on a piece of paper. It feels like I'm part of a business structured plan. And I'm a cog in the machine. Sometimes a nameless cog, and you know, sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't to various levels of functionality. What I like to do or what I have done, I like to call it the new day one. And I like to have employees or team members, that would, you know, join my organization, start on a Friday instead. Or I've talked to other people, they have, you know, who do this now and they have people start on a Thursday, what have you. The point is don't start on a Monday. And that's because I want to shift that energy. I want to shift that energy from someone feeling like they're a name on a piece of paper to me valuing them and respecting them as a unique individual with unique thoughts and a unique background, unique perspective. I want it to be as non-homogenous in team structure as it is energy and me respecting this employee. And I want that felt with immediacy. And, you know, now with hybrid or full remote dynamics, it can operate a little bit differently, but because there's a core set of values behind how I do things, I feel like they resonate and translate all the same. So what I do is when somebody comes in on a Monday, again, virtually or in person, I'm there to greet them. If it's in a hybrid capacity, we'll set something up online. If it's in person, my butt is out of my seat and I'm there at the door and I'm greeting them, right? I'm not distracted by my phone. I'm not playing Wordle. I'm not getting dragged into another meeting. Like I've blocked that time off in advance because I want to be there for that person. I'll show them, you know, here's where the coffee machine is. Here's where the mother's room is. Here's where you can work. And then we go to their desk and, you know, there's usually a card there signed by the team or there's some flowers and, you know, it's not like, let's find this person a laptop or let's blow some dust off this keyboard I found in the corner. Like everything's right there waiting for them. Mm-hmm. Their equipment's there. We're not scrounging for anything. And this all, you know, this should be in the DNA of how we treat this person from that point on. Like everything is thoughtfully considered and compassion and empathy are baked into every interaction. You know, and after, you know, we do some tool setup and things like that, or getting to know people, I usually like to take people off site for lunch. And that's, you know, standard. Let's go out for lunch on your first day, but we're not going out to lunch and, you know, between bites of food, you're trying to talk about things and it's not really working out. And then you go back and it's right back to work. We go to work, you know, we go to lunch and we keep it casual. And then, I usually ask a new employee to take me someplace in the city that inspires them. And I'm in downtown Chicago, so there's no shortage of things like that. And I've gotten, you know, deer in headlights looks. I've gotten answers with immediacy. Sometimes I've gotten no answer at all. And I'll usually have something teed up, and all those scenarios are fine. But the goal there is to understand the spatial considerations of how this person is inspired and what drives them to do what they do. And, you know, I genuinely believe that far transcends a portfolio of work about how someone thinks, about how they've evolved, about why they do what they do. And I've seen some cool things. People have, mm-hmm. I've gone everywhere from, you know, a construction site to graffiti on the side of a subway station to a story that sticks out to me is a person took me to the south of the city where the Museum of Science and Industry is. And there was this lovely view of the city, the skyline from the south. And we kind of walked out there by the lake. And I said, why are we here? Why did you take me here? And they said, they were in a career path before this that involved helping people. And the sector that this career path was in was not scratching the itch, but this person did a deep dive into what their values were and knew helping people solve problems and helping people connect and helping people grow and achieve what they want to do. That's what fulfilled them. And they had that laser focused value identified. So they dropped everything and they had a family to take care of. They dropped everything. This is a major risk. And they went to a UX boot camp. And they knew, like, you know, that same clarity I had when I was in high school. This is it. This is what I want to do. So they, there was a job fair at the organization I was with where people can kind of come in, approach, you know, the various VPs of the organization and talk. And I was there as a VP of design. And this person approached me cold and blew me away, knocked my socks off about how they held that conversation, how they had done their homework about what we do and who I was, about why they were driven to do what they do. And I knew this person was going to be absolutely phenomenal. And they became an immediate leader on my team. Ultimately, I hired them. So, you know, that, and then we wrap up the day at that point when somebody takes me where they are. It's usually like 2-3 o'clock and we're not going back to the office and we're working, like, we're done. Like that's where I want to, that's the energy I want to carry through the weekend at that point. That's why I do it on a Friday, because I want them to go back and talk to their family and talk to their friends and maybe go on social media. And by doing those things, it this way of onboarding or hiring becomes immediately measurable and trackable as well. And I think that's where the value to the organization comes into play, because if they want to hire people on a Monday and I say, you know what, I'd rather do it on a Friday, and look how it helps, stem attrition. Look how it generates organic marketing. Look how, when people are coming in to interview, they're actually mentioning this hiring process. Cause we've, you know, I've written a blog post about it or something. That is all trackable and measurable back to the organization. You know, that's what moves the needle on change, not because it feels good, but because it helps the business save money or it helps them retain employees or things like that. So it's kind of a fantastically valuable process to me, to the new employee, and ultimately to the business as well, which I think is a sweet spot.
Exactly. I mean, this few hours of like journey becomes this, you know, preview of the employee's life, and I think that is really beautiful, being able to share it with you and for you also to understand their background. I think that is most companies probably don't know a lot of their employees, so I think just those few hours to take them into the spot that they love to share will probably solve a lot of reasons of, you know, attrition and all, because employees want to be able to share to their employees, and employees also want to understand their employers also. So that, you know, that exchange of, you know, that moment of being able to share a favorite spot in the city pretty much summarize everything that who they are, and makes them also be fulfilling in what they're doing in the company. So yeah, that is really great though. So I want to take this conversation further into your book, because I think it's a good segue on your book, In Fulfillment. So a softball probably. Why did you write the book and what led you to write it, and also who is it for?
Yeah, so the first book, Creative Culture, when it, like I said, when I first was doing the PR circuit, if you will, around that book, I was on shows like with for sales and just general business, certainly some design ones as well, because it was a more macro level book. This one specifically, because it's very near and dear to me, is like for designers is in the title, in fulfillment of the designer's journey. And that's not to say there aren't takeaways from that agnostic of career. There absolutely are. You know, we're talking design shifters. Not everyone starts in design. So like, you know, the prioritization, identification of values, like I said, can apply to anyone. And that's in the DNA of the book. But fulfillment to me is a jewel. And there are different facets to that jewel. Like fulfillment is a word, but there's a lot behind why fulfillment is important. And I first gave a talk when I was first putting this material together in my head at UX. I gave the opening keynote at UXPA International 2 or 3 years ago. And I wanted to see how this material would land talking about fulfillment. And I made a very open plea at the end. I said, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I grow from objective, candid, valuable feedback. Please approach me after the fact. I would love to hear how this lands, because if people have said it's garbage, I probably wouldn't have written a book about it. But thankfully, it resonated with folks. And some of the feedback I got was, you know, I heard fulfillment, which is, you know, a very me caliber thing. And then as I was talking more, like people realized it was taking that concept from me to we. I am fulfilled, which is great for my work and my portfolio, but how does that impact how people are going to engage with my work, or how people are going to engage with my work? And how does that, you know, what are the butterfly effect impacts from those various points of connection? And that to me, you know, we've kind of teed things up nicely to this point. That to me was an essential message to get across: the identification of values, identifying the practices in which we thrive. Obviously talking about humility, but behind that is inclusion and growth and support and making meaningful work and doing our best work. And, you know, having a career's journey that always ensures that we're evolving. Like I said, you know, we keep talking about being students of our craft, and I make sure the last chapter is called In Leadership. And I talk about, you know, design leadership specifically, but I actually lead that chapter saying, you know, we don't have to be married to like a LinkedIn caliber progression where it's like, I'm junior here, then I'm mid, then I'm a manager, then I'm senior, then I'm a VP. Like, that's obviously fantastic. And that's great as you interview from role to role and to show demonstrative career progression. But I've had people on my team who have been senior designer for 20 years, or I had a fellow who just retired who was art director for probably 35 plus years, and they knew they were fulfilled by their hands in motion, and they knew they were fulfilled by evolving in their craft. And that is absolutely fine. I want to make sure that that's crystal clear. That is absolutely fine. You evolve in the way that is most beneficial to you and your work, and ensuring that connection between your work and those who are engaging with it is airtight. So those are kind of the messages and the learnings that I felt were essential to get out there. Not just at this point in my career path or my growth, but also based on where the industry is in design. And of course, I try to make it as timeless as possible, but it's very much a narrative storytelling book as well. It's not a Gantt chart book. It's not, you know, there aren't pie graphs and things like that. It's a design book. I think it looks like a design book. It's a unified concept between content and creation, which might be a little bit, not to use my business term, might be a little bit anomalous to the space of books about design or UX, but I think that's a good thing. So hopefully the material is connects with folks as much as I hope it will.
And with that, you know, we're talking about fulfillment here. How would you know, like, how would you know if this is still fulfilling or not fulfilling? Because some of us, like, especially when starting out, we might have different reasons for, you know, going to design, especially if you're shifting. Like, when you're going through this journey, how would you know, or what would be, you know, the questions that you ask, what would be the red flags to saying that this is fulfilling or this is not fulfilling?
Well, like, I mean, we had that question earlier about, you know, design certainly is a profession, and we need to put food on the table. We need to pay the bills. But I feel like there's an innate aspect of fulfillment in the craft as well. That way I have to be equally mindful of. And when you know you are, when you know you are going into the office and you are ticking the boxes, or you are not second guessing your decisions, or you are not actively seeking feedback, or you are not pushing for more research, or you are not ensuring goals are aligned, both design goals and business goals and metrics are included, you can kind of tell when you're just clocking in and clocking out. And again, I don't want to mix up, I don't want to conflate clocking in and clocking out as that's a negative in terms of design, because, you know, we know this is a profession as well. But I mean, just taking the boxes and not making sure our work is our best. And if our work can't be our best based on our disconnection or based on business constraint, I feel like that's a eureka moment. And I had one of those, probably the second or third positions I had, where I was hired as a, I think it was a very broad title, like creative associate. And I was definitely going through the motions and the work I was doing, because one of my values is that I now recognize is to be challenged. Mm-hmm. And I was not being challenged. And I was just, you know, doing very production caliber work. And again, there's nothing wrong with that kind of work. But for me, being challenged and pushing things a bit further was something that was not being fulfilled. And I knew the work I was doing when I was able to kind of step back. I'm like, this is not good work. Like I was able to look at it, and then I was seeing it being pushed to the business's website, because I was working on the website, and I was like, oh, this is, you know, I'm not doing well here. So I took some steps there to make sure I could be fulfilled, which is a longer story and I'm happy to tell it. But, you know, I think there are, I'm going to pause for a second here. There's an ambulance going by. Joys of being in downtown Chicago, my friends.
We all have that. It's roosters here. Ambulance in there, it's roosters here. But it's a good thing it's at night now. If it was morning, like, the roosters are like crazy.
Is that right? Okay, I'll pick back up. So I think there are points of self-recognition that we can be absolutely aware of as we're going through our career. And, you know, when we look at the me part, from me to we, you know, if you want to take on a new role, like how is your work looking? Like, if you have to explain it and talk about it to somebody, like, are you able to objectively talk about it and defend the decisions you made? So it's all things to be mindful of. It's certainly valuable to your evolution and making yourself portable as you can take on more other roles you might want. But we also have to think about, you know, how it impacts the business, and of course how it impacts those who are going to ultimately interact with what you're building.
Yeah. I'm curious though, what do you recommend to designers who are like at the loss? I mean, in the current industry that we are now, businesses can easily cloud your judgment and be able to like manipulate your, you know, manipulate products to manipulate users or manipulate people. What do you recommend on designers who are like, how to say this? They're already at a loss. They don't know already. It's not fulfilling, and they probably also want to be able to like do good in the industry, but they are, you know, their hands are tied, and they are just doing work that is for the business, that is directed by the business. So what do you recommend for those designers? How can you help them like get out of the rut or something?
Well, I have another A and B response to that. The first response, you know, I talked before about what brings change to your organization, like what moves the needle, what would make them amicable to potential change. And I think anytime you want to do that as a manager or as an employee or as a leader, agnostic of hierarchical title, if you are able to demonstrate business value to what you might want to do differently, I think that's an option. So if you know, you could say, we need more research on this. I know that's going to shift the deadline or the release cadence or what have you, but things aren't testing, you know, as they should. The usability tests are still coming back with poor results. We need a little more time. And because we need a little more time, that would reduce contact center calls, and that would reduce, you know, people having to find information. And, you know, I know I'm saying things in a vacuum, and you know, senior folks might say, yeah, that's great. That's great, pal. But we're doing X, Y, Z. But then you've tried, you know, like, because you've tried to even bring it back to the business, and the business is not willing, even with the facts in their face, then perhaps it's time for a shift. And, you know, again, I'm not saying quit immediately or anything like that, but I'm saying if you start to test the market, and I think folks are a lot more willing to test the market now, you know, given the, whatever you want to call it, the great resignation or what have you. It used to be a ding on folks' resume to say, I worked here for 6 months or here for a year. I think that's really evolved over the past few years. People are moving around and people are looking out for what's best for them, which I think is absolutely fantastic over the last few years. But as you're looking, if you start looking for a new role, like, how can you find your best fit, or how could you find a role that you know would better align, or you know, have that beautiful synergy between ethics and values? And I think the best place to start is just, you know, to look at their website. Look at their website, because every business's website has gone through the same process that we would have gone through as designers. They went through a UX exercise. They prioritize their IA and their hierarchies. They have the navigation aligned based on what they feel is important. So you can take a look and see, where's culture? Where's about us? Is the about us page diverse? Is the about us page just the board? Is there a day in the life page that shows how people engage with the culture? You know, so you can kind of see how the business is talking about themselves without talking about themselves, if you will. And that might help shape a better picture of where their values are and how their ethics might align to your own. So, you know, we're trained as designers and researchers to keep our eyes open and to be inspired by those around us. And I think as we have our wits about us in that job hunting process as well, to apply those same lenses we do in our day-to-days to the job hunting process, I think that will serve us immensely well.
That's really a good indicator.
And especially now with, like, you know, industries are shifting and, you know, new careers are popping up, new job titles are popping up. And then, right, in the discussion of shifters, like, what would be your thoughts on, like, people shifting from different, I know this podcast is about design shifters, but what would be your thoughts or your experience of people from different industries shifting into more design related field, more like UX, being a researcher, or, you know, in that area? What would be your experience or thoughts about that?
I think the story I told earlier about the, you know, on that new day one, where that person was shifting from a field completely different from design, because they had that laser focus on where they were fulfilled and where their values aligned. And then they made that career leap, and it just turned out fantastically well. And they were a tremendous, tremendously inspiring person to work with and collaborate with. And I've seen it a lot, honestly, Carl, with people reaching out or folks I've had in my team, and very diverse backgrounds. And I think that's fantastic. That's the best way to inform a non-homogeneous, diverse way of thinking, of crafting, of creating. And when someone comes from, I don't know, insurance, or someone comes from banking, or someone comes from, you know, singing in a nightclub, or you know, what have you, accounting, and they recognize, you know, what their values are, where they're fulfilled, and they want to apply it to design, like, that just makes our work infinitely better, because those perspectives are way different than mine as someone who came from art school and had this formal training. I think I have some rigidity built into my process because of that. And I value being able to collaborate and connect with folks who come from completely diverse backgrounds or organizations, or have made career shifts either early or late in their career. that just makes everything infinitely better. The creative process, the feedback given and received, what we are building and creating, because we're better able to represent the world around us at that point. Yeah. Not everyone is agnostic what you heard. Not everyone is a designer. People have different backgrounds and people create differently. So I think being able to represent that in the way we think and the way we build is nothing but valuable.
Yeah, that's very much like super valuable right now, especially with how we, I would call it like silo sometimes, how as designers before, and we're still fighting that, you know, fighting that, we're pushing for more inclusivity in the design sphere, and just having that mindset of like having other shifters move into design and gaining a better perspective of how we see, you know, our reality, our society, that's just super important. And thank you for talking about that, Justin.
Yeah, I have a bit of a segue because design industry has this bad rap to be intimidating, right? Some people outside of design will see their perspective as like, I can't be a designer because I'm not creative, or I can't draw, or I can't think creatively.
Wear black shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, just there's this, like, you know, wear black shirt and glasses stereotype. And like super.
Yeah, like cool kids.
Super sleek.
So yeah. So what are your advice on that? To make industry more approachable, or more, you know, more familiar to the outsiders, to the people who are like outside of design. What are your suggestions or probably advice?
Well, I think it's as much about the person shifting into design as it is those who kind of set the baseline of inclusivity within the field already, like those who are in design or those who are those who are leaders hierarchically, or you know, agnostic of title. That is absolutely incumbent upon us to make the industry more welcoming and more inclusive. You know, and I feel like there's a lot of high school cliqueism going on there. Like, you know, I can't fit in with those folks, or those folks are huddled up in a corner and they're physically making it look like I can't be a part of their group. There's a lot of that in design. I think there's a lot of that in any profession, honestly. And that does nothing but inform homogenous creation and homogenous thinking and homogenous schools of thought. And that's absolutely horrible. So that's why, you know, when you have folks on social media who brand themselves thought leaders or regarded as such, and they, you know, make comments or post hot takes on X, what have you, that come across as not welcoming, or makes the field feel more daunting or less open or less opening than it can be. I mean, that really, I really take that personally. So I feel it's incumbent upon us, you know, on podcasts like these or books we write or talks we give, that's great, but also in practice, in the day-to-day, about how we, you know, I mentioned how the New Day One is structured to make that experience feel as welcoming and compassionate, as empathetic as humanly possible. So I think there's the, I get on stage and I talk about stuff, that's great, but there's also the in practice, which I think is infinitely more valuable, even to make folks feel as welcome as humanly possible. So that's an ongoing process, Chris. I appreciate you asking about it. You know, as someone who didn't quite fit in various aspects of schooling along the way, like, you know, like I said, I hold that close because I know how that felt, and I know how it felt how to be excluded at various points. And I've learned and I've grown from that because I don't want others to feel that way. So I feel that's all part of the big package with a bow on it. That is the field of design. The way we create, the way we treat one another, and what we're creating and why we're creating all have to be spawned from the same set of values, the same school of thinking.
Interesting. Yeah, I just want to like wrap this conversation because I think we can stretch this whole conversation to 3 hours probably at least, but we don't have
to
that
talk
much
more.
So as a closing question in our end also, what do you hope readers take away from your book, In Fulfillment, which will come out in June 26th, right?
June 27th, yeah, which is right around the 27th. Corner. Ideally, they're taking away all those facets that comprise the jewel of fulfillment. They're understanding how they can identify their values. They're recognizing how important the value of humility is. They're understanding that their career evolution can be as bespoke as humanly possible and needn't align to societal or LinkedIn caliber norms or you know, posts with little animated GIFs of party hats exploding saying, I have a new role. Really, it comes down to what is best for me and what is best for those who are going to interact with my work. I think those are the two main things we have to be mindful of. And I've operated in roles throughout my career where I felt indebted to the organization who's hired me. Like, you know, they're paying me this money and we went through the interview process and I've told all my friends, like, and then I get there and like the job is, the culture isn't healthy or I'm not fulfilled or the work I'm doing is at odds with my values. And I still feel like, oh, you know, but I've gone through this whole process and I've like lingered there longer than I've had to. And my work has suffered and my spirit, my creative spirit has suffered and I've been stifled. But you know, as we discussed, it doesn't have to be that way. Now, I'm not saying quit immediately, but maybe we could start looking at other roles or organizations that might be a better fit for me. So, you know, the book goes from day one in a career through ultimately design leadership, whatever that looks like for you. And it's, like I said, it's a very narrative, storytelling driven book that should help you identify, you know, where you'll best do your work, how you'll best make your work, and why are you doing this? Like, why are you a designer? Which some people have immediate answers to, and some people kind of have to scratch their head and think about that. And I think when we have a crystal clear sense of what our values are and how they align to why we create and what we're creating, like, we can answer that immediately because we have that laser clear focus. So hopefully there's a lot of takeaways that can help you grow and evolve wherever you're at in your career. And like I said, it should be as timeless as humanly possible, given it's a values driven book. So I'm incredibly excited about it. I appreciate you asking about it so I can talk about it, of course. And it'll be, if you are interested, it'll be in your hands soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Justin. And yeah, grab your copies, In Fulfillment by Justin Dower. Thank you so much, Justin. Thank you so much. For joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Justin. And where, aside from your book, where else can people learn from you?
Yeah, the book's website is in-fulfillment.com. The other best place to learn from me would be Anomaly's website, which is Anomaly with an I, Anomaly by design.com. You know, if you want to learn about me or the values I'm driven by, or if you want to see me speak at some point, that's the best place to find that information. So I appreciate you asking.
Awesome, thanks, Justin. We'll make sure to put that also on the link on the podcast also.
Awesome. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.